Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. It's very nice to have you with us today. It is the 3rd of April, April 3rd, 2015, Friday and Good Friday. And we thank you very much for being with us on this Friday. And let me also welcome our panel. We have Rosemary Armeo with us, who is the SUNY Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to all of you. Good morning to all of you. And I have to tell you that I'm still thinking, still wowed by yesterday's compliments for Rosemary as the person that people would most like to date.
Oh, my God. I was going to try to hide that today, Alan.
For Metroland magazine. Well, I must say you were sort of braggadocio about the whole thing on the Facebook yesterday. So I just thought I'd mention it again.
Yeah, I got some interesting comments like, yeah, right, you're like honey to the bees, Rosemary. And my favorite was, sure. And how many other senior citizens got this compliment?
But see, it is a compliment. That's it. It is a compliment. We also welcome NYPERG's Blair Horner, who's been a busy, busy man this week, and we appreciate him taking the time out to fit us into his schedule.
And if Metroland had a category for the person least likely, that would be me. I would win that. We have to come up with a category
for
Blair. Very eligible.
Right. We'll have a writing campaign for you next year.
I need all the help I can get.
You cannot find a person who is more quoted in all of our newspapers and on sure. TV, and every time you look, there's Blair Horner. What a great hero you are, Blair. Yeah,
well, I'm decaying true. In front of everyone's eyes. I guess that's the way we get to see it.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to WAMC.org/roundtable and go to our panel post 4315 and comment there as well. Figure since we have Blair here, and we'll just start off before we get on because we have all kinds of huge items to discuss, but let's just get a budget wrap up here if we can of what this week. This was hell week for you, right?
It was very busy. They went late, and 3:15 in the morning on Wednesday, final passage of all of the remaining budget bills. So technically, the budget was not on time. Not the 3 hours in the morning makes that much of a difference. But it was sort of in some ways similar and some ways worse than normal. Hammered out in secret. No one knew anything. The bills were being pumped out onto the floor. Legislators hadn't even had a chance to look at them. And, and at $142 billion later, we have a state budget.
Did you stay up for all that?
No. I have. I leave when the lobbyists leave.
Okay.
I figure when they
all
leave,
right.
my day is done. Well, then it's all sort of on automatic pilot, you know? I mean, that was the way this was all negotiated, since it was behind closed doors, the deals were done. It was really just sort of a mechanical exercise, as well as allowing the lawmakers an opportunity to vent their spleens. So in the Assembly, for example, you had the Democrats complaining about the budget. You had the Republicans complaining about the budget. But then the Democrats voted for it, and the Republicans voted against. So, I'm not sure if that means anything other than everybody was unhappy at the end of the day.
There must have been an awful lot of empty spleens, however.
Well, I mean, and the other, you know, it's one of these things where it really is, I think it turns out to be more or less a bare bones budget. A lot of the big policy initiatives the governor pushed out were policy initiatives that fell off the table, other than ethics and some of the changes to the education system in New York. The ethics bill, the closer you look at it, it's like when you look under a microscope, you see a lot of space between the microbes on your slide. The closer you look at this ethics deal, the more holes you find. So I'm not exactly sure what actually is going to change. And then on the education policy, obviously there are some significant impacts on teacher tenure and the ability to get tenure. So that was probably, in many ways, the single most significant outcome was the impact that it could have on K-12.
You know, I'm reading the Schneerson book, The Contenda, about Cuomo, and his parochial school education was very important to him. That's clear. He went all the way through until Albany Law in parochial institutions, and one wonders whether or not the way you were raised affects your personally affects your politics. It's Good Friday, of course, and nothing meant here but respect for the Catholic community. But one wonders when he came up with this idea, which was really bad, about getting around the so-called Blaine Amendment in the state constitution by allowing parochial school parents to deduct costs from their that they were paying in tuition from their taxes and state taxes. What's the scuttlebutt on all of that, Blair?
Well, I mean, I haven't heard it framed in terms of the parochial school background. I've had it seemed it more framed as the governor versus the public employee unions generally. And the only ones that are really the only union really big enough to stand up to him are the teachers union. And so it's become sort of a, you know, like a cage death match between the teachers union and the governor. And it plays out all across the spectrum of policies, even the college faculty, which are subsets of the teachers union, have also been fighting with the governor. So it seems more like a broad sort of the governor's, I think, more politically. I mean, again, let's assume at the moment that he substantively does believe in everything he's advanced. I think there's a political advantage that he sees for himself in taking on the public employee unions and sort of carving out a middle of the road persona. Whether or not he's right or wrong, of course, is another question.
Well, you know, as I read this book, there's so much interesting stuff in it. But one of the things that I really found interesting was a substantive amount of time that was given to the animus between Cuomo and Ed Koch over the fact that Ed Koch always thought that Cuomo put up the signs that said "Vote for Cuomo, not the homo" in the campaign, and one wonders whether or not some of his pro-gay stuff, which has been so well taken and so heroic as far as I'm concerned, came out of having to clean up that record.
No, I mean, it's you know, I think the governor makes his calculations for lots of reasons, one of which is to be at the head of the pack in the country. And so I think that applies both to the equality and marriage issue, also to the gun control issue. And it may be playing out in terms of sort of the education reform issues that if the schools are failing. So I think part of it is wanting to be ahead of the curve on the policy stuff. And I think, you know, when you think of him as the sort of the gearhead type of guy where he likes cars and everything else, I sort of think he visualizes himself as the guy under the hood of government trying to make it work better. Again, that doesn't necessarily mean the policies are always right, though. We had, for example, extensive discussions and battling with the administration on their so-called ethics reform bill. And I think they just got the policy on that all wrong. But I thought it was another example where the governor was trying to get out ahead of the issue, and the substance, I think, suffered.
So how do you
what do you think?
Sorry.
I
was going to ask about. Okay, thanks. I was going to ask about the ethics measure. How do you characterize it now? It's certainly not what you were advocating for.
No, it's another slice of the loaf.
So it helps, but.
Well, it is a slice of the loaf, and if you only like half of a sandwich, then I guess it's okay. but, I mean, if the governor is governor long enough, maybe we'll get the whole loaf. But this bill exempts, for example, the whole thing is about outside income. This was the reaction to former Speaker Silver's arrest, and the governor says he wants to have complete and total disclosure of outside income. Turns out that's not what happened. So there'll be some additional disclosures, but just disclosing, for example, shoe sizes of legislators does not necessarily mean that they're meaningful disclosures. And on these ethics issues, there are broad, very broad categories of exemption, particularly in the area for lawyers. Anything from marital to criminal law is exempted from the law, from the law that passed. And then lawmakers even have an opportunity to go to an outside panel to have even the clients that are allowed to be disclosed to be kept secret. And so there are lots of holes. And if I wrote a memo on the governor's ethics bill, I think I'd have to punch a whole bunch of holes in it before I could even distribute it to anyone, because that would be sort of the visual, symbolic view of the bill, of the law.
And you would watch the cement trucks driving through all those holes. But what's interesting about this is that the very quiet, usually, Eric Schneiderman has taken on the governor full bore. on this thing and saying the only way to do it is say no outside income. And it's beginning to look more and more like he's right. And if I know anything about Andrew Cuomo, I'll bet he's up there with a black plume coming out of his out of his head when he sees this.
Well, you know, his dad once said, I think he's quoting someone else, in politics, friends are fleeting and enemies accumulate. And I think that's the case here where people are sort of piling up now to be willing to battle the governor. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of his term plays out.
Do you think
there sure are a lot of people late to the game?
Well, you know, every party starts when the cool kids show up. And so I guess they're showing up now.
Right.
Wait
when there's
a
only
second.
One slice of the loaf.
Wait a second. You think I'm that cool?
Alan, I think the both of us are in these sort of, we're there first. But the cool kids, we're waiting for Rosemary to show up because that's when we know the party starts.
I have nothing to say about that.
Oh, I thought you had it, but you had a question, didn't you?
I did. Do you see that the legislature is going to spend much of its session filling in the work that wasn't done before the budget deadline?
Well, it could, because there are some big issues that were left off the table. Rent control is one of them.
Minimum wage.
Minimum wage could fit into, I think the bigger issues are sort of what happens with property tax cap, what happens with rent control, what happens with mayoral control in New York City, and that those big issues drive the end of session, and whether or not other things accumulate as part of the log rolling aspects of it, I think is really the big question. So if the city of New York is looking to extend rent control and mayoral control of the schools, they may be less able to organize themselves to push for more progressive issues such as raising the minimum wage. So I think I think it's hard to predict what issues get sucked up into the debate over the big issues. But I think the big issues are what's going to drive the end of session.
Okay,
and there may be some budget issues, too.
One you left off of the list that I'm interested in is the sexual assault policy on SUNY campuses.
No, that's right.
Well, I'm not clear on why that got dumped out of the budget. Why?
Well, it's not one of the issues I worked on. I know that the civil liberties folks were raising some issues around the way that the bill was drafted. I think the sort of the basic issue of, you know, no means no sort of approach is one I think that everybody could agree with. But then you get into the technical details of how college students operate with each other, and you may run into some problems where it's sort of more puritanical than realistic in terms of you might be outlawing basically consensual activities. And I know that there were some civil liberties issues that came up out of that, but I wasn't involved in it. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the issues that gets brought up at the end of session. Same thing with the extending the ability of SUNY to continue to raise tuition.
Right.
I think there's going to be a big push on that as well.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to a letter or two, and then we'll take our news break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Amtrak, announcing the Adirondack Winter Getaway Package for travel Thursday through Monday on the Adirondack, serving New York, Albany, Montreal through April 27th. Some blackout dates apply. Amtrak.com. Williams College Department of Music, featuring Anthony DeMare and the Liaisons as they reimagine the songs of Stephen Sondheim on the piano, Friday, April 10th at 8 p.m., music.williams.edu. And Field Goods, providing year-round deliveries of produce from local farms for pickups at workplaces or community sites and offering workplace wellness programs, field-goods.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Blair Horner make up the panel this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And I believe we have a letter or two, Alan.
We do. We heard from Rich, who says, what has happened to Cuomo's call for merging of government and services in New York State? cities, villages, towns, school districts by merging would make a better New York? Well, I think the answer to that one, Blair, I'm sure you'll jump on this one too, has been that everybody knows it's a good idea, it's a good concept. The problem, of course, is that people love their space. And it's, as I've often said, ever since, the folk song goes, ever since the first, Tom Paxton, ever since the first amphibian stepped out of the slime, they went to different caves and they looked out and they looked at each other and said, I hate you if you're not in my cave. So it's always a great concept, but it just doesn't seem to work out. Somebody always says, I hate them and I want my own thing. And I don't want anybody else having a police chief that they might know and that I don't know and like that.
Well, there are organized groups that want the status quo to stay in place. There's a disorganized bunch that probably would like to see more efficient government. And so that's that's the political obstacle. I think what the governor's done is by putting on the property tax cap and other measures to cut back on funding, that he effectively, through economic leverage, trying to force localities to merge. We'll see if it plays out.
I have just about a minute. Go ahead,
Adam. I was just going to say, in Great Barrington, we have a wonderful school system. In Egremont and Sheffield, they have another wonderful school system. Everybody knows they ought to be merged. They just don't have enough students. They don't have nearly what they once had. But they won't do it. People like to be on the school board.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We will find out what's happening through BBC News, and then we'll be back to our panel. We welcome your letters in the meantime. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Friday, and we have a great panel. It's Alan and Rosemary and Blair and your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We will get to your letters right now, and then we will move on to other topics. Go ahead, Alan.
That's correct. Our friend Tony, T-O-N-I, says the state budget is more than $140 billion per year for 20 million human New Yorkers, so we spend more than $7,000 per each man, woman, and child, even if we paid 150 assemblymen and 63 senators $1 million each and paid the governor, pronounced controller, an attorney general, $1 million. It is less than $250 million to avoid bribery when the budget is $142 billion means paying 25 cents per each $140 of the budget.
Well,
is this
worth
a Common Core question?
Carry the one.
My head hurts.
Schneiderman's plan would cost chump change roughly 0.2 of a penny per dollar. First of all, Tony and panelists, you can fight me on this if you want. It's a great idea. It's a great idea. No outside, just like the Congress says, and that's it. But let's put it this way. Let's say you were making, according to the Tony plan, $200,000 a year. But you could legally steal, $400,000 a year. Would you give it up? That's the issue, I think. It's not that you're not right. It's that they won't do it.
Yeah, I think the bigger problem is guys at Enron and J.P. Morgan and Citibank. It just shows that millionaires and multi-millionaires would be as big as crooks as anyone else.
Legal crooks. Okay, so let's go to John's letter, who says, "Love Blair's analogy on the ethics bill. If you like eating half a sandwich, half a loaf is okay. Brilliant, Blair. New York needs your continuing conscience." Wow. And Julia,
well, my family's
says,
listening.
They are.
I gave them $5 each to write something.
Julia says, merging or consolidation leads eventually to centralization. We all know that in generally the squeaky wheel gets the grease in politics. The problem with centralization is that the squeaky wheels can dominate and leave real needs wanting. And that's from Jules. And let's see here, is Irene says, This is Andrew Cuomo's enemy and the enemy of the middle class, teachers and school children. The Republicans have a slim majority. But my point to all of you, Irene, is that I think the Republicans have control of the Senate because Andrew Cuomo wanted it. He didn't veto that stupid reapportionment bill, which he swore he would do, and he didn't do it. And that gives the Republicans the right to draw their own districts, very Democratic, and that's why we have the Republicans sitting there right now. Did you want to take me on that one, Blair?
No.
Okay. And Tom says...
Well, you're no fun.
And Tom says, Joe, this is up in your territory, so you know more about this than I. It's probably knowing Tom can be a Weisenheimer, but I don't know. Would like to see Schuylerville combined with Victory Mills. Do you have any idea where I know where Schuylerville is.
Victory Mills is right next to it. I don't understand because I guess I'm confused because that's nowhere near where Tom lives. So I don't know exactly what he's getting at or why that is something being suggested. But
Okay. So
what would you call it?
Is that
what would you call the combined entity?
Schuylerville Mills.
Victory Schuylerville.
Millville.
I'm not a big fan of that. So,
of combining.
Yeah.
Towns.
Yeah. Yes.
Why? Why not?
Because I think that I like the identity. The fact that I also, having been through one of these in our town, I don't really see the benefit. It often seems that when they make the change and say this is what we're going to do for you, it doesn't really end up like saving the taxpayer any money.
There's a lot of people make that argument, but actually this is really sort of a false sort of issue to be looking at because the benefits are really not there.
Right.
Sarah, spelled without an H, says, so they got away with the yacht subsidy. Talk about ethics.
Oh, yeah.
Blair?
Yes. Well, you know, if you're if you were hoping for a minimum wage increase or if you were an undocumented immigrant going to college, forget about it. But if you are someone who has a yacht or wants to go out and buy a private jet, you got a tax break. You got to love
Master of the soundbite. That is the best soundbite.
The donor class does well. The rest of us have to eat cake or whatever it was that Marie Antoinette said.
Also a good sound.
She never said cake, but I can't tell you what she did say. So there is there
coconut
is an argument,
cream
a counter-argument.
Easter
yeah,
pie.
No, that wasn't what I had in mind. But I am thinking, though, that there's an argument, a counter-argument, which is people have been buying their yachts in Florida. They've been buying them in Schuylerville. They've been buying their yachts in Florida.
We have a yacht basin in Schuylerville, I must say. It's a lovely yacht basin. Yeah. It is. It's very nice.
They've been buying them in Rhode Island of all places, and that's because their taxes are lower on these things. And the business class's argument is, I'm not making the argument, I'm just telling you, is that if we want to sell yachts in New York, we have to do it that way. And we can charge, but we can't charge too much.
Well, this is a classic issue where had they had hearings on this, if there was like a public debate, people could make the argument and we could see if it's true. I mean, this is the problem when you have like a closed, secretive process. Guys that make campaign contributions get tax cuts and say it's a good thing. And so, you know, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong.
That's a really good point. Transparency would solve a lot of this.
Yeah, make the case.
Ease a lot of this, yeah.
And B. Book Fromm checks in and says, not legal crooks, just unprosecuted. Okay.
Good point.
And Dean says, I'm against combining districts also because I think that the smaller schools are better for education and student-teacher interaction. That's what she says. And certainly up here in the Berkshires, that there's no question that small classes, like them or not, are a result of not enough kids. Okay, I guess that's it. I loved John's email, which said that if you like eating half a sandwich, half a loaf is okay. Brilliant. Okay. No, but we're all better off eating half a sandwich, aren't we? I was just down at a New York delicatessen. I had half a pastrami sandwich. It was much better than having a whole one, and there weren't that many calories.
Rarely have we been this far off the rails. Joe, get control.
Is that rarely or really?
Joe, please.
Or is the pastrami rare?
All right, let's go to the news and try to get to at least one item on our list today. How about the deal with Iran? Iran and the United States, along with five other world powers, announced on Thursday a surprisingly specific and comprehensive understanding on limiting Tehran's nuclear program for the next 15 years, though they left several specific issues to a final agreement in June. Rosemary, you begin.
I begin. Okay. This is a great deal for Iran. I think the Israelis and some of the Republicans are right about that. The original idea was these sanctions stay on until you stop building your nuclear weapons capability, and that has now gone away. So they have won. What did the U.S. get out of it? I reject the Republican idea that we look weak and how do we trust them? You don't make treaties with people you trust. Who are you going to make it with then? England? Maybe. So all of our treaties, all these sorts of deals are with countries that you don't really trust. It's all in whether you can do something if the Iranians come back, if they fall back on it. And they actually have an advantage here. The former prime minister of Israel came out with a statement today that I think is really cogent. He goes, they are one country under a bunch of ayatollahs. They can do what they want the next day, whereas the United States is in a coalition. If they want to take action against Iran, who is like violated terms of the agreement, it will take a long time. So Iran really did very, very well here. On the other hand, I think that Obama is right, that it's ridiculous to think that keeping the restrictions on without doing anything else is going to stop Israel. It did not stop North Korea. It did not stop Pakistan. So we have some control now.
For another view, we go to John, who writes, I want to be the first to say this morning that if the deal with Iran and the opening of Cuba hold up, it will give President Obama's legacy unmatched since Roosevelt's New Deal. Hooray. I didn't think it could happen in my lifetime. That's from John.
Do you get that?
Yeah, I get it.
Explain that to me.
No, I think that... Well, far be it from me to explain it to your satisfaction. Nevertheless, if you read the New York Times editorial, they're far more, on point than I am about this. They basically believe, what were the choices? You make, it's a 15-year deal. Actually, it's a 10-year deal with decreasing whatever's during that last 5 years. But a lot can happen in that time. In the meantime, you don't have others threatening to drop bombs on them or to go to war with them. What do you really lose by making the deal? Nothing, as far as I can see. It's a positive move.
Yeah.
Any negotiation is based on, you have to have a good faith negotiation. And so if you don't really trust the other person's good faith intentions, you have to have this whole sort of verification regimen. And all we have right now, what we're reading in the papers, the end of June deal is really where the action is. Every negotiation I've been in, which is far more primitive, less important than the one we're discussing, what matters is at the end of the day, what's the final language? And right now, Iran has to get something out of this negotiation. The United States has to get something out of it, and because that's the way compromises are done. If otherwise, it's just a capitulation by one side, and that's not how negotiations work out. So I'm not surprised that Iran gets something out of it. I'm not an expert in this, so I'm not entirely clear as to what the United States is getting out of it, other than perhaps calming down the increasingly intense regional conflict that's going on between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Here's one thing the United States gets out of it. Iran now is coming back into the world community. We have shut the door on them since 1979. They're now coming back in, and that there's great hope will means that the Ayatollah's command will decrease. It's a very young population in Iran, and they don't necessarily follow the strict regime of the mullahs. So it's a chance for them to talk with other people, to become part of a world play again. And they're definitely involved in a huge battle in the region with Saudi Arabia right now. So they're now a player, and they're recognized as a player. And is that a bad thing? I don't think so.
Well, but you raise an interesting question, and Rosemary, and that is, they are bad people when it comes to the inflammation of the Mideast. We know that. And they're backing all kinds of bad actors and people like that. Will this deal in any way mitigate that behavior, that bad behavior? That's the question.
Yeah, but you know, you can't. We're not negotiating over what their proxies are doing, right? I mean, it would be like negotiating with the Soviets on the SALT treaties back in the day, and then arguing that somehow the Viet Cong have to be part of that sort of negotiation. You know, I mean, the Saudis have lots of bad actors running around out there too. So, you know, it's a very tough place, and this is about nukes. This is real. That's what the negotiation is about. Can you do anything to limit their capacity to put a bomb online? Because once they do that, the Saudis want one, the Turks want one, the Syrians will probably want one, and the whole place
labeling of countries as good and bad is crazy. We didn't think the Russians were good. We thought they were evil, and they had a bomb. And yet, because they had a bomb and were equal with us, we have negotiated with them since the end of World War II. They have not used their nuclear weapons. And that's part of what being a member of the world community means. So,
well, I don't want to get into a big fight with you about this, but I do think, Rosemary, that, you know, we talk about mutual self-destruction. They use a bomb, we use a bomb, everybody's gone. So they didn't do that. The question I have is whether some of the actors now, once they get their hands on such a bomb, will be problematic whether they'll use it or not. I think there are some, if they'll blow up a bunch of kids, if they'll go into a school, if they'll blow themselves up, I think there's a possibility that you can't really trust them. And my question is to all of you, can we trust the Ayatollahs to adhere to the agreement?
I think there are measures in place to make sure that if they don't, something happens to them. And I'd be far more worried about North Korea than about Iran.
Or Pakistan.
Pakistan,
They have the bomb, right. And effectively the country is under control of people who have been radicalized. So, I mean, there's real problems in the world. And we talked about this before, I'm sort of despairing about what's going on in the Middle East and then going into Africa.
Right.
But, you know, I don't see what else you can do other than try to negotiate with somebody, or they're going to make the bomb anyway.
At least talk to them. Yeah, I mean, if you had your druthers, you'd want no bomb in Pakistan, none in North Korea, certainly none in Iran. But that's not the choice anymore. That's off the table.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about other issues. We'll do a lightning round. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Stony Point Center, an open space in the Hudson Valley, staffed by a community of Jews, Muslims, and Christians committed to peace and social justice. Accepting bookings for conferences and retreats, stonypointcenter.org. The Madison Theater, Albany, New York, showing classic and second-run movies, serving organic popcorn, now open, the Madison Live Music Performance Theater, themadisontheater.com. And Lotus Energy, a regional solar energy design and installation firm with 20 years' experience installing solar systems worldwide. LotusEnergy.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable panel. We have a few minutes left, which means we have a few more topics to discuss. We go to Atlanta, Georgia, and a dramatic conclusion to what has been described as the largest cheating scandal in the nation's history. A jury this week convicted 11 educators for their roles in a standardized test cheating scandal that tarnished a major school district's reputation and raised broader questions about the role of high-stakes testing in America's schools.
Wow. Boy, did those guys, the dozen teachers, educators who went before a judge, did they ever lose their gamble? They went in and said, we think we can be found guilty. Actually, one was, 11 were not.
11 of the 12.
And the prosecutor in that case goes nuts and charges them under laws meant for organized crime. So they're charged with racketeering and conspiracy. And they end up now facing 20-plus years in jail. Mind-boggling. I think what they did was horrible, but we don't send many murderers away for 20 years, much less teachers who wanted their kids' scores to look better. Wow.
Well, I think it also raises the whole issue of the high-stakes testing sort of educational paradigm because,
sure it does.
I mean, when you put so much emphasis, and in this case they were getting bonuses if their scores went up, if you play the whole game around these standardized tests, and the standardized tests are easily manipulated, as we found out, they were wearing gloves and changing the answers on the sheets, you're creating temptations on top of the fact that these standardized tests are not particularly good measures of learning. They can be helpful, but it shouldn't be the primary driver.
And because I always point this out, the power of the press was really important in this case. Mm-hmm. They boldly wholesale changed scores. And it was the paper in Atlanta which took a look and said, how can these scores have gone from horrendous to wonderful in 1 year?
You're
just isn't right.
And
so that's what set off the investigation that led to this.
But I just can't see
sending these people away for 20 years. That's just so hard.
Well, that's a point you've made. I'd like to make a different one this time. And we know that Governor Cuomo is tying these test results, making it even more tempting, whether you get fired or not, as to whether or not your scores are going up. So you raise the ante for this to be done, and it ain't good.
You know, that's a good point, Alan. I mean, New York is trying to have higher stakes testing. They have tests now that are created by some outside company that are used for the education system. To some extent, the information on how those tests are put together is considered proprietary, so the public doesn't know. There should be a robust debate on the basic bottom line of whether or not these tests do what they're supposed to do. We shouldn't just accept them at face value that they are educationally appropriate. And again, like we were talking about before with the yacht tax cut, maybe we should be having a robust debate on the validity, examining closely the validity of these kinds of educational accountability measures, because if they don't work, the whole thing is sort of a crazy system. And in Atlanta, it apparently easily gamed, which creates a whole other series of problems. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the prosecutors, as Rosemary correctly points out, want to send a message. That's why they're talking about 20 years in jail for hardly a murder. We have many murderers getting, less time for one reason or another. And that's the reason that they're doing this. They're charging them so highly because they want to put a stop to it, they are saying.
Well, and it is a big deal. I mean, if you're lying about what the children learned and then they get moved up another grade and somebody else lies, people graduate without the basic skills necessary to function in society, and that's bad for those kids. So this is a big deal. I'm not sympathetic to teachers that game the system at all. Although I have to admit, 20 years behind bars seems pretty excessive.
I guess it's a pretty good lesson for students saying, maybe I won't cheat after this.
Well, there's illegal cheating and there's legal cheating. As one who wrote the same essay I did on every Regents I ever took, which was my trip to Spain, I memorized it, I put it down. And whatever you asked, that's what you got back. That's the way it goes. We teach people to game the system every day.
Spoken by Dr. Alan Chartok.
Yes, good point. Very good point, Blair. And finally, we'll end with the tweaking of the bills in both Indiana and Arkansas, a revision seeking to remove divisive parts of both bills and laws and legislation.
Well, I'm enjoying watching this. I don't know how you do this. I still think the laws are flawed, but Jeb Bush dancing around it has been fun to watch. I'm for the law. Well, I think maybe you should be careful about the law. Yeah. Oh, no, I don't know.
But it ain't being, but it's not being done because it's the left speaking out or the good people of the town speaking out. It's because the big businesses told these guys who are running these states, this is very bad. We don't want it to happen, and everybody runs for the hills, not because of the ethics of the situation.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the thing that sort of drives me crazy, I mean, the whole thing drives me crazy, right? So don't get me wrong. But the fact that they're all sort of twisting in the wind because big businesses come after them, the Walmarts of the world are unhappy because they might lose business, or the Final Four may have fewer fans in the stands. I mean, that seems like maybe the most compelling argument in terms of making people move off the dime, but sort of a crazy argument as compared to the direct issue itself.
But you can also make
Joe,
the
before
argument.
We leave,
yes.
I was just going to say before we leave, I hope you'll give us each a line to say, one line.
About?
You know, goodbye. What's your line, Rosemary? What's your line, Blair?
Okay, what's your line, Alan?
I took my mother on a trip to Spain.
What's your line, Rosemary?
I want to eat Easter pie.
What's your line, Blair?
Thank God for spring.
What's your line, Joe?
Oh, look, we're out of time. We thank you all very much. Have a great holiday weekend, and enjoy it. Enjoy whatever warmth there is out there. And it was 70 degrees last night. That was nice.
Very nice. That felt great.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. What?
Snow tomorrow.
Right.
Are you serious?
You know, we'll take what we can get.
Showers in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
All right. It'll melt.
Well, so much for our last
line. I'm going to go eat pie.
All right. There we go with the pie.
Always does.
Have a great time, and we'll be back with more Roundtable right after this.